Okay, now we're back for our final summary, which is just audio. And in this segment, I just wanted to point out some interesting things that exist, interesting comments that are in Mark Faber's, F-A-B-E-R, book, Tomorrow's Gold, Asia's Age of Discovery. It's worth getting out of the library and reading over because it points out a lot of things about bubbles and so forth and things that are basically impossible over the long term. And at the beginning of chapter 3 on page 37, he tells he's got a lot of interesting stuff in here, but I'm going to give you one as a comment by Ralph Waldo Emerson. The art of getting rich consists not in industry, much less in saving, but being in a better order, in timeliness, and being at the right spot. Okay, so that's very good for talking about these charts, particularly if you're interested in common stocks. The the price earnings ratio is it's a really terrific chart because if you don't understand that chart, you're just never going to be in the right spot. That's the point, and it won't be timely, and you could run into some really serious problems. When you follow along with Faber's other stuff, it's the interesting one. Interesting topic is Faber says, following: if you assume that one of our forefathers had put the equivalent of just one U.S. dollar on deposit in the year 1000, that is 1,010 years ago, and you had invested that at a rate of 5% annual compound growth rate, which incidentally, it's not unrealistic. It's not unrealistic if you look at long-term interest rates. You know that usually you can get five in this recent history in the U.S. You can get 5%. So that doesn't seem to be unreasonable. But if you had over the 1,000 years, he wrote this at the end of the decade. The 1,000 years, the compound growth rate is absolutely astronomical, and you would have found out that you had. This tiny U.S. dollar would have increased by now to 1,546 million trillion, which is a quadrillion dollars. And if we invested this small fortune at just 6%, we would enjoy an annual pre-tax income of U.S. 93 quintillion. That is... quintillion, 3 million times the current gross domestic product. Well, all these numbers are very astronomical. In fact, you cannot you end up in these quadrillions, which are the numbers. You have to kind of remember what because the terminology isn't that clear. You end up with money which is astronomical multiple of the total world assets as it exists. And so when you go back and you say, what's the flaw with the 5%? Well, I don't know. I guess I'll probably have to check the math and make sure that if you do compound $1 at 5% per annum over 1,000 years, that you do end up with a right counting the number of zeros in there and see that, and then go get a fact book out and check out and see what the total value of the all real estate, all stocks, the whole world population is. And then, just show that the thing is completely false. And assuming that everything has been done correctly, it means that the present preoccupation with my charts, which is, says you buzz around to the various places and pick out the place that's going has the right set of T's or the right set of cycles, which would lead you to believe that you could do this over 1,000 years, because we know there are cycles that exist for that period of time, that there's a flaw in it. And so the question he's raising, in which you have to consider, is where did the money go? Another example, which I thought was interesting when I came across my education, was that Benjamin Franklin was very interested in this problem. So he in the foundation that basically held on to all of his life's work, he opened an account and put a modest sum of money in it. they might have been like $100, invested it at a reasonable savings rate. And the idea was, well, let's see, wait for 100 years and see if it really, if this amazing number comes out, or 200 years it comes out, you know, we're making big money here. And what people asked the question of the people, where's the money? And nobody could seem to find it, okay? So the question is, where did it go? Well, sometimes what happens when you think about it, Farber will tell you a lot of interesting things. There's confiscation, there's wars, and so forth. But I always thought that the from the standpoint of the investor, probably what happened is they thought they had a good project going, and that this program wasn't going to go anywhere. So they took the money and they put it into like a party or a function to in honor of Franklin or something like that. There's a tendency for one of the places that you have to think about where all this money is disappearing to, which is apparently is true, is they go out and have a good time, and you know, all of that money eventually goes down to the sewer system, or it goes down to your gravesite. And so when a wise investor is always in the point of keeping things fairly simple, don't look for loss, watch out for loss mechanisms, like you take a trip because you like it, but it's not really educational. That's another one that's money down the drain. Having too many good times is money going down the drain. And you have to. So you'll find that very often a lot of the best investors are very frugal. Some of them are actually cheap, you know, but they learned the lesson that you can't. There's a compound growth curve going up, but there's something that's eating away at it. And the thing that's eating away at it is the one that you have problems with trusts. You know, you leave the money and the kids spend it all, and then the trust has dissipated, and there's no more money left for the other people. It's one of the interesting problems that you have to come into if you're trying to branch over very long periods of time. But even if you're not interested in doing it over a long period of time, you have to watch out for where the flaws are, because the flaws are almost all in bubbles, and particularly if the bubble is done on margin. So one of the things you want to do is make sure that if you're going up in something like that, something like where these rocketing uptrends are, is that you carry close stops or something like that. But you can still get burned by the unexpected, and so you factor that all in when we're talking about how all these interesting ways to make money, which look like they're absolutely surefire, and you can jump from one money-making place to another making place. There's always something. There's always something in there that's trying to say that. They summarize it that money never sleeps. Okay, it's always looking for an opportunity, but if you look over 1,000 years, it's impossible for them all to win. And you can say that the rate of return over 1,000 years is probably very close to zero. Because if it's it can't be that kind of a multiple. When you backtrack it down, you're going to have to find out that the $1 that was invested is going to have a rate of return which is like a very, very small fraction of 1%, before you can ever get the numbers to come out where it looks like it's realistic. So the argument that the next big bubble might be that you can just go around to these various places, and you can always find, there's always another place where you can make money. If that was true, then the example that Farber gave was probably will tell you that that's false. Okay, so that's it for the presentation for this Sunday, and we'll be back next Sunday. Wednesday we'll be taking a look, and hopefully we'll have some more information to look at the inverted T's to see if that's going to be any help when we go off this next oscillator peak. Till next Sunday, thanks for checking in, and we'll see you next Sunday. Bye.